Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Most Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though, what do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. Before I bring our, my one and only guest on today, I kind of want to give him a little bit of crap before I bring him on, even though he's listening. You know, it's funny. I've been doing radio for almost 17 years. I've been doing this show right here. I think this is my 513th episode as The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire. And we've been friends on Facebook for a long time, and he hits me up and he says, "You don't interview jiu-jitsu guys, do you?" And I kind of had a chuckle and I had to bring it up and give him a bad time before I bring him on the air. With that being said, welcome Professor Phil Dunlap. Phil, how you doing, brother?
How you doing, Don? Thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this.
So have I. You know, honestly, you know, because a lot of people don't know this about me. You know, I started shooting jiu-jitsu, gosh, probably five and a half years ago, and I hated it. I absolutely freaking hated it. And I didn't even know the people that I was shooting, to be quite honest with you. I just, hey, it was a paycheck. I got to feed the family. Let's just do this crap. And then I found myself at Respect. And it was the invitation only, I think it was Respect 3, invitation only to black belts from all over the world. And then I find myself standing in a room with Rafael Lovato, Jean-Jacques Machado, J.W. Wright, Ezra Lennon, Jared Dopp. I mean, and the list just went on.
That's
I got
some talent.
Fanboyed. Yeah, right? And I got fanboyed, and I sat back, and after shooting that night, I had a 4.5-hour drive back to Springfield from Kansas City, and a lot of thought perceptions went to my head, and I kind of started to realize that I didn't hate jiu-jitsu. I loved it. What is it about the artistry that has
Dunlap? You know what's funny is I always liken it to I had done a lot of kickboxing early in my career, Burmese boxing and Thai boxing. And what's funny is I never really enjoyed grappling as much as I do now. I always said, striking is blunt force trauma. It's fast-paced. It's exciting, whereas I find grappling, jiu-jitsu, sambo, you know, whatever people want to call it, I find it to be a thinking man's game. It's a game of fluidity in inches, okay? And a lot of times, you know, you're watching two high-level guys like, you know, let's say a Marcelo Garcia and a Damian Maya rolling, and, you know, it's a game of micro-movements, and that's what I, at this stage of my life, find so fascinating about it, is the depth that, you know, guys can get to. And like, you know, I'm 57 years old, and I'm still trying to, and I've been grappling my whole life, and I'm still trying to get to that point where I feel like I've mastered something, and every time I do, I wake up and I think I suck.
Yeah. You know, I like that analogy, though, because in my interview with Tom DeBlas, you know, I asked him, I said, although you're a black belt, when you truly look at yourself in the mirror, are you a white belt at heart? And so I'm going to pose the same question to you.
Always, always a white belt. Okay, I'll be honest with you. I'm fortunate in that I get to travel a lot for business, and I get to go by, you know, schools all over the country, train with different people, have a good time. And I swear to God, every time I go into a new school, like I was actually out in a school a couple weeks ago in Oceanside, XL Jiu-Jitsu. Great guy, Michio, runs the place. Former bodybuilder, another kind of big guy like me, and it was kind of funny. I picked up a couple little nuances on his game that's so much different than my game. And I swear to God, I train with my friends out here in Vegas. I train with people all over the place. And every time I hit the mat with, you know, a new guy, like even mid to high level, it's one of those things where I pick up, I always seem to pick up some nuance that I feel I neglected.
Yeah. You know, I truly feel you there. You know, I kind of want to take a step back. We're gonna get to your multiple super fights here in a moment, but I kind of want to take a step back. You know, you were expected to be an aspect of the sport. You were expected, and I guess some family lineage aspects. How hard was it for you as a young man to want to pick up that respect for the family and the lineage and move forward into the sport?
Okay, the person that actually trained me was my grandfather. So it was a weird situation in that it was a really weird family dynamic. In other words, he was the person that was most influential in my life and raised me. And what happened is, you know how you're a kid and you crave the attention of a role model or a person you love? And the harder I trained, the more I got his attention. So it almost became, like I always said, for me, training almost became equated with love. And it's kind of funny, to this day, like when I was out in California, I had a couple people ask me if I have an off switch. Because once I get to training, I'm like a little kid. You know, 57 years old, and I'm all excited like a little kid. And it's one of those things that, you know, he instilled that in me. And I don't know whether, you know, from a psychological aspect, if it was like a little kid looking for love and looking for approval, but that just stuck with me. I love every minute of training. I love every minute of coaching. And I love every minute of competing. Like, people ask me at 57 why I compete. Because I can. And because I love it.
Yeah. You know, I think the sport decides to win, you know, when to let us go, not when we let the sport go. You know, I think it's tremendous that your grandfather was an influential character in who you became. You know, and at 15 you started fighting. And this is only going to be the only Wikipedia-type aspect to the show. Trust me on that. But, you know, you were just getting started. And adversity struck your life. You know, you ended up breaking your neck on your 26th birthday. How hard was it for you, Professor, to pick up and continue after that aspect?
I'll be honest with you. You know how youth is. You're invincible. Especially when you're a young fighter coming up, had a great deal of success overseas. And remember, being one of the few Americans to fight at the time, one of the only Americans ever to fight in Burma. In fact, Shannon Rich is one of the only others. And then to fight in Thailand, in other words, I lived a very good, exciting life at the time. So when I broke my neck, it was almost like mortality struck. And it was crazy. It took me a year before I could really even hit the mats, you know, train in martial arts again. I had basically, you know, I was doing a little bit of cardio. I was trying to rebuild my body. And once I, it's kind of funny, it probably took me 3 years before I was comfortable falling backwards. Like if somebody did a double leg on me falling backwards, it probably took me about 3 years before I didn't tense up like a brick heading for the floor. And, you know, that feeling of mortality did stick with me because I wanted to fight again. I'd had a lot of fights by that point, a lot of kickboxing matches, and I wanted to do mixed martial arts and grappling. And it was like one of those things where suddenly, you know, the sport started to grow, opportunities started to rise, and it took me till I was 37 to get medical clearance to fight again. So I fought from 37 to 44.
And let me ask you another question from the past, because you know, I don't think too many people are familiar with the actuality of Burmese boxing. You know, it's one of the harshest aspects comparative to traditional Muay Thai. You know, there's a lot of deaths, there's a lot of maiming, there's a lot of injuries. You know, would you say that coming up in such a harsh aspect of the fight game that it truly created and defined the man that you would be later on in life?
It's one of the things, not just Burmese boxing, but when I say all hard combat sports, any combat sport where you really have to train hard and put your body through almost torture to get good, okay? I always tell people it's a microcosm of life. And, like, you know, I always tell my students, like, you know, I teach for free, so it's one of those things. I get a lot of students coming from, disadvantageous background. So what happens is I always try to tell them it's a microcosm for life. Okay, it's the bust your ass principle. If I want to get good at fighting, I got to bust my ass. If I want to do well in school, I got to bust my ass. If I want to do well at work, I got to bust my ass. If I want my relationships to succeed, I've got to put work into them. So I always tell people it's the same. It's a microcosm for life. Those same lessons you learn on the mat, in the ring, in the cage, if you apply them to the rest of your life, they'll define who you are. And I'll be honest with you, my success in business, my success in relationships, is all based on those formative years of learning that there's nothing without personal sacrifice. Like, I always get a kick out of kids coming by. They think fighting is two ring card girls on each arm and a championship belt on their waist. Okay, what they don't realize is it's cutting 15 pounds at the last minute. It's when your buddies are going out on a Friday night for pizza, you can't go because you got to make weight that weekend. Okay, or they're going out drinking, you can't go because you got to go to training. Okay, people think it's this great lifestyle. They think there's a lot of money in it, and it's not. Like, you know, you've been in the game forever. In other words, like, you know, we were joking around before about retirement. In other words, there's no retirement for fighters. You know, it's kind of like you basically end up doing something else in the fight game. You become a photographer. You become a coach. You do something like that. Fortunately, I had a second business. So, in other words, that's always where I made my income. And fighting was almost like, you know, my pastime.
Yeah. You know, it's tremendous. You know, I'll be honest with you. You inspire me. You know, when you did the write-up, I decided to use your write-up because first you called yourself an old man, but you know, we're not old, man. We're just seasoned. But the simple fact that in one of your super fights, and I'm not even going to try to mention his name because I'll butcher it and I don't want to disrespect the man. You're donating all the proceeds to the gentleman because of certain criteria. What is it about Phil Dunlap that truly has him giving back in that aspect? I mean, because let's face it, in today's day and age, most people wouldn't do anything or be inclined to give back in such a manner.
I can put it in a nutshell, okay? And it's one thing. I like to really think that I was a nice guy before. In fact, you can go back to New York, and all my students, they'll rave about me, and they'll say nice things. Every once in a while, you hear somebody say he's an asshole, and I'm your typical New Yorker. I can be an asshole. But what I tell people is, you know, I survived cancer. Okay, so what happened is I'll never forget sitting in that doctor's office thinking to myself, you know, I'm in the parking lot, I'm sitting in my car, and the walls are closing in. Doctor told me I had 6 months to live. Okay, so I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, you know, what am I going to do? Okay, and it zeroed in on me that everything I had ever been concerned about, everything was meaningless. My house, my car, all the bullshit we worry about on a daily basis is completely meaningless. Nobody ever died thinking, oh, I want to work a little bit more. What went through my head is, you know, that moment, all these memories came flooding through my head. And then I'm thinking about my family and how to tell my wife that I'm going to die. Okay? And then all the lives I impacted, my students, my friends, And then what happened is when I got my health back, now remember, I had retired at 44, and I had had, you know, I have CTE, so, like, you know, I have 119 pro fights, and a lot of them were bare-knuckle kickboxing. And my nickname was the White Rhino, and I won 28 fights by headbutt. So it's one of those things that I use my head as a weapon, and I'm paying the price. But, like, so I could never go back to striking. But when I got my health back, you know, I decided that I was going to spend the rest of my life, okay, focused on the important things. Okay, my family. My family comes first in my life. I will do anything for my family. Okay, it's why I focus so hard on work, because I want to support my family. I want my kids to go to college. I want them to do well. Okay, the second thing is I want to make more memories. So I started water skiing again, windsurfing, and I came out of retirement to grapple again at 52. And, you know, since then I've had about 300 matches. I compete every chance I get, simply because it's more memories. And basically, I try to give back to the community. I try to make an impact on other people's lives, whether it's teaching for free or in a case like this. My opponent is a great guy. He's a veteran. We're friends. We know each other from the local community. This is not one of those, like, you know, when the super fight came up, he reached out to me and he said, "Professor, would you be interested in grappling with me?" So I bumped up to super heavyweight to do it. I have mad respect for the guy. The guy was a mixed martial arts fighter, kickboxer. I'm actually glad it's not a kickboxing match, because this guy throws some canned hams. He hits hard. But it's one of those things. And then I found out that his son DJ has a rare spinal condition. Okay, he needs 24/7 care, and it's Dutch and his wife providing it. And they need hospital beds, they need machinery, they need wheelchairs. And it's kind of like, you know, everybody likes to bandy about these terms like warriors, gladiators, and stuff like this. I'm sorry, DJ isn't a fight. My fight with cancer was worse than any of my fights, in a ring, on a mat, whatever. Okay, this family is in a life and death battle. And, like, you know, so when we agreed to it, you know, I wanted to give my purse. You know, I was hoping to raise some awareness and interest. And I figured if I gave my purse and all my ticket sales to them and, like, did a little fundraiser, maybe it would help get the ball rolling, because I really believe this is a community. Okay, in other words, like, you know, I go out, you know, I do a lot of these tournaments. I go out and I become best friends. You know, basically we walk on the mat, we simulate murder, we walk off the mat, and we're friends for life. You know, it to me, it's such a pure thing. Some of my best friends are people I met competing with.
See, that's tremendous, because, you know, a lot of the sport really doesn't understand the aspects of jiu-jitsu and the side that doesn't get paid for what they do. I mean, now the artistry is getting paid for some of what they do, but, you know, we call it old man jits, but, you know, you go back, those are the guys that worked on the farm from 5 in the morning till 5 at night, and then they jump in their pickup truck and they go to the gym and they grapple for the next 3-4 hours. And they don't make any money from it. They do it because it's a passion.
We do it because we love it. And it's also, I'll be honest with you, like, you know, I'd like to say I'm the most altruistic person in the world. But in other words, I'm in a fortunate position. I have a really good career, and I don't need money from the martial arts. Okay? And let's face it, like, even if you're running a school or you're fighting in a UFC, you know, unless you're Conor McGregor, you're not making much money in this game. Hey, most of the top tier jiu-jitsu guys aren't making much money in this game. So, you know, I make my money, you know, doing my living, and I always tell people, you know, for me, this is about fun. This is about passion. This is my passion in life. This is what I enjoy doing, and it actually makes it more fun doing it for free.
I love it, man. I commend you, because I run a page also called Para Jiu-Jitsu. I was part of the aspect that fought with the Gracie family and with the greatness of Fuji BJJ and Professor J.W.
Right.
Wright, I was able to allow para-athletes to face able-bodied athletes.
Cool.
Well, I'm an amputee myself, bro. So
I know. I did know that.
You know, and it's something that meant a lot to me, and it changed a lot of lives, and it creates great aspects, and it shows the world that the sport isn't barbaric. So I commend you on that. Brother, you're set this weekend for back-to-back super fights with the one and only Shannon the Cannon Rich. What do these moments mean like you for you to participate and go out on the mat and have fun?
You know, it's kind of funny. My guys will always joke with me. Like, you know, we're doing these two super fights at NAGA. And, you know, it's one of those things where my guys laugh because I walk out. Like, you know, I don't even warm up anymore. I'll be coaching them. They'll call my division or they'll call my fight. And I'll just walk over and go out. In other words, it's kind of like I was doing a submission underground that I'll never forget. It was the first time I did it. I went up to Portland, and it was kind of funny because it was freezing cold. I came from Vegas in December, and I didn't realize how cold it was going to be. So I had my board shorts on and my rash guard, and I warmed up. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to get cold. So I put a pair of snowman pajama bottoms on and a leather jacket. Yeah, and I walked down to the cage, and it was so funny because my ring entrance went viral the next day. Okay, because it's kind of first the announcer thought I was the fighter's father. And then when I took the jacket off and put the mouthpiece in and took my pajama pants off, he was kind of going nuts, saying it was one of the best ring entrances he ever saw. But it was like I remember standing in that cage looking around and thinking to myself, this is the coolest shit ever that these people asked me to come up here and paid me money at 52 years old to do this.
That's cool, man.
And then, unfortunately, my opponent got in the cage, and he was 6'6", 265, and then I realized maybe this wasn't the greatest idea in the world. Hey, I'm joking there.
I love it, man. That is so cool. But, you know, Shannon's been around a long time. You know, I've known Shannon for years. You know, this is a tremendous opportunity for you. It's a great way to get out and have a little bit of fun, you know.
I consider Shannon a friend. You know, he was promoting events. I did the event a couple times. I would go out to Phoenix and do the super fights, and it was a starting out organization. So, you know, like I waived the purse and everything like that to help them get going. But Shannon's always been very cool with me, and I got to be honest with you. You know, it's kind of I'm not one of those guys. You know, remember at this stage of my life, I'm a weekend warrior now. My days of considering myself a badass and a champion, you know, they're long gone. Right now, I'm just a guy out there having fun, and I'm going to get to go with a guy who's been in the ring with Sakuraba. He's been in the ring with Frank Shamrock. He's been in the ring with Dan Severn. In other words, when you look at this guy's career now, some of the fights he lost, some fights he won, but he's been in with a who's who of mixed martial arts history. And it's kind of like, for me, that's just so cool. And, you know, I get to go out, you know, with a guy I like, a guy I respect. We're going to, you know, in other words, we're going to tear each other's limbs off, and then we're going to hang out afterwards.
I love that. You know, and it's funny because every name you've named, I've interviewed. And I got to tell you, you know, it's humbling at sometimes. And then there's other times that, you know, they're just my brothers in the sport. You know, I've been around the sport, so go ahead, Professor.
It's so funny because I was teaching someplace yesterday, and Stefan Bonner was teaching there too. And it's kind of funny, and I'm thinking to myself, isn't it so weird that I'm here in a cage playing with some guy, Stefan Bonner standing over there, and, like, you know, he's been on TV more times than I can count. You know, it's so cool, and that's what's so fun about this sport at times. You can walk out on the mat. You can show up in a NAGA. Like, I talked to a guy who showed up at a NAGA and got John Jones in the first round.
Right. You never know who you're going to get, and that's the tremendous thing about this sport. You know, I look at our interview thus far, and I'm truly enjoying it, but, you know, I sit back and I look at the sport a little bit different than you, and it's weird sometimes, a little bit perplexing, but, you know, as you say, it's a job. And, you know, I look at what I do with all my heart, and I do what I do with all my heart, but if I was standing next to John Jones, it wouldn't mean nothing to me. You know, if I'm standing next to DC or, you know, anybody, they're just another person. But see, let me explain real quick in a nutshell. Back when I first came over from boxing to Pride to Glory, then to the UFC,
yeah,
you know, we were like kids in the early days. You're to be seen but not heard from. You know, we were supposed to be shadows in the corner. And so a lot of people say, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you? Why? You know, why should I brag about what I do when I'm just doing my job? You know, and that's how I fed my family. The reason I do this radio show is to give back to the sport for the roof over my head, the food in my stomach, and taking care of my family. And it's an honor for me each and every time to have legends like Pat Miletich, Paul Berlins, Justin McCauley, and Colin Oyama, and professors like you on my show, because it shows the world that it is a brotherhood and a sisterhood, and there is more to it than two gentlemen stepping on a mat or into a cage. But what I'd like to know from you is you walk in the gym in the morning, and you turn the lights on, and you step on that mat. What reflection does Phil Dunlap see in his life?
Okay, all I can say is, yeah, I've never thought of myself as a great thinker. I'm more of a mover and a doer. And what happens for me is when I go in that gym, it's almost like, you know, you hear surfers talk. You know, in other words, now I don't understand surfing. Okay, I stand up on a surfboard, I fall off. Okay, but I hear surfers talking about the perfect wave. When I'm in that gym, and if I'm in a cage pummeling with some guy, if I'm on the ground grappling with some guy, if I'm on my feet, even holding pads, okay, it's almost like my perfect wave. In other words, when I'm in that gym, when I'm on that mat in competition, life is the way it's supposed to be. For me, it's that moment of complete purity where nothing else exists, okay? Problems at work disappear. Problems at home disappear. Hell, all I got to worry about is not getting my elbow popped. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, it's such a simple moment in life. I walk into that gym, and it's like as soon as I walk in, the outside world melts away. And the other thing I love about gyms is, how do I phrase this? The minute you start sparring with somebody, the minute you start grappling with somebody, for the most part, every once in a while you meet a bonehead. Okay, but you know, almost like an instant bond starts to form. Now, I'm a big guy, and I put a lot of pressure on people. And like I always say, I see it when I take a heavy scarf position on somebody. Do they just quit? Or do they get this look on their face like, oh, fuck, man, this sucks. Okay, and keep going. Okay, and what happens is you just build this consistent, and it grows and grows and grows, a bond of respect. Like, I get a kick out of it. Like I said, I had gone out about a week ago to a school in California. It's like I didn't know a person out there. A week later, I leave, and it's like I got an extended family in California now.
Yeah.
Okay, same thing in Vegas. I moved out to Vegas about 5 years ago. Okay, I did not know a soul. Now I've got this great network of extended family that's just unbelievable. Okay, so, you know, I have gotten so much, you know, from the martial art and sport that, you know, whatever I do to pay it back would never be where I thought I had given more than I'd gotten. Even teaching for free, people always tell me, oh, you're a great guy, you teach for free, you ask nothing in return. No, man, I get more in return. I watch kids change their lives, and I get to feel like I'm part of that.
Amen. I totally get that. I don't mean to cut you off, but I totally get that, because, you know, a fighter will call me after a show, and he'll say, you know what, that was awesome. I got to talk. Thank you for letting me on your show. I'd love to be back on it again. And I'm like, why are you thanking me? And he said, what do you mean? I said, I get to interview thousands of fighters a year. I said, I never thought of it that way. Yeah. You know, I'm the one that gets, I'm the winner here, because I get to take away a tidbit of knowledge from each and every one of you. and I get to instill it in my life.
Honestly, I actually say, you know, in other words, all the relationships in a fight game. Okay, you know, take the guy wrapping your hands and you're a cut man. You're sharing a moment in time with him. Okay, you know, the person interviewing you, you're sharing a moment in time. And you know, many times, you know, a chunk of your life with someone. Okay, and it's one of those things, like I say, we meet people. And we get to share journeys. And I always tell these kids coming up that want to be fighters, you know, take a look at the promoters. You know, every relationship we have in life is supposed to be symbiotic. Okay, you know, why are you with the woman you're with? In other words, you either marry or you're dating a girl, and it's usually not because she's the hottest chick you ever saw. Okay, it's usually because of the way she makes you feel or the way you feel about yourself when you're with her. Okay, and I always told people, you know, take a look at every relationship in your life. Like even the promoters, they need to put asses in the seats. Help them sell tickets. You'll always have a place to fight. Okay, bring value to everything in your life, and you'll have a much better life.
Yeah, you truly will. You know, it kind of leads me into a question that, man, I've asked legends and world champions of the sport, but brother, you humble me, Professor. You really do. So I think this question...
I really appreciate that.
Well, it's the truth. And, you know, you're kind of a hard nut to crack, but I got a question that I'm going to ask you that I think will allow me to get a little bit deeper into you. What does pride, passion, and perseverance truly mean to you, Professor?
Okay. Pride is, for me, it's a double-edged sword. Okay, on the one side, sometimes I find myself getting way too prideful. You know, it's that moment where you start to think you're all that. And then I step back and I realize pride is really a sense of satisfaction over my accomplishments. Okay, like I always tell people, you know, somebody asked me one time why I share my losses on the internet. Because I'm as proud of my losses as I am my wins. Because every one of them, every experience adds up to make me who I am. So I've always said pride is that double-edged sword. In other words, sometimes you need a certain amount of pride. Otherwise, you're not going to have self-esteem. But too much pride can be a bad thing. Okay? It's like, yeah, I'm not a big fan of guys like McGregor.
No.
And to me, that's almost like the example of overly prideful. You know, like when I say this, the deadly sins. Okay, in other words, you need to find that balance, and sometimes in life it's a constant swing between, okay, now I'm getting too full of myself, I'm getting too prideful. Okay, and then you start to getting down on yourself and you realize, wait a second, don't get down on yourself. You've accomplished all this in your life. Nobody can take it away. For me, that's kind of, pride is always a double-edged sword that most of us are trying to walk a line with. Passion is something I really believe in. I really believe, and it became much stronger, you know, after the cancer, with the idea of whatever you're doing, do it. Be in the moment. When you're with your kids at their game, be there. Don't be thinking about going to jiu-jitsu class. Don't be thinking about work. Be there on a holiday. Be there with your family. When you're in jiu-jitsu, do jiu-jitsu. Okay, be all there. Don't start feeling guilty that you're in jiu-jitsu. Be in jiu-jitsu. When you're at work, 1,000% at work. Okay, bring passion to everything you do in life, and you're going to be successful as hell. And perseverance, between you and I, I've always felt like I was the poster child for perseverance. Okay. Shoulder. Right now, I need shoulder replacement and knee reconstruction. I just refuse. Perseverance is no matter how many times you get knocked down, you get right the fuck back up and get back in the game. Okay, it's kind of like, actually, my wife did this for me with the cancer, you know, because I went through a little period where I got really down. You know, I was ready to throw in a towel, and she looks at me and she goes, "What are you?" And I'm like, "Huh? What are you?" "Well, I don't know." "What have you done all your life?" "Fight." "Yeah, you're a fighter. Start fighting." sometimes you just need somebody to remind you you need to persevere over any obstacle that comes up. Because, man, like I'm a big believer in the Buddhist philosophy that life is about suffering. So you better, you damn well better enjoy any good things that come up, because more suffering's right around the corner.
I love that.
I hope I answered your question.
Oh, you truly did, because I get it. You know, I don't share very much about myself in life. I'm one of them individuals that believe not everybody has a right to know me. And
yes.
If you do have an aspect in my life, you still truly don't know me. But I'll share a little bit of me today with you, because I think it's adequate in so many ways. Over the last 22 years, I suffered with diabetes. I've had over 230-something surgeries. I had a feeding tube for 14 years, and I fought cancer 3 times.
That's crazy.
Two times lymphoma and 1 time breast cancer. And I've been given my death sentences more than once. And I think that moment in life when you're told you're no longer going to be here, or you have so much time left in your existence, I think it truly changes who you are. It makes you look at life totally different, and it defines you in a different way than anything else or any other person can. You know, what would you say the redefined Phil Dunlap learned from those adverse aspects in life and overcoming? How did you gain from those adverse moments?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was actually speaking about this the other night with somebody, and I was talking about the idea that I'm on stuff as much, in other words, we were in a conversation, and he was telling me that, oh, you do a great job of, inspiring older guys. And I'm like, fuck that. Okay, I do this because I love it. Okay, he goes, yeah, but you go about it in a good way. And I said, listen, I'm a nut job. I got the super fight with Shannon Saturday. And then I decided to sign up for 2 divisions because I figure I want to get some extra rolling in. Okay, look, between you and I'm a nut job with it, but I want to squeeze every drop of life out of the time I have left. Okay, I want to be successful at work. I want to be successful in sport. I want my family to have a great life. In other words, the idea is I want to drain every drop of life out of the husk that's my body, so that there's nothing left when I go. Okay, because when I got to be honest with you, when I got down to 158 pounds and I was sicker than hell and I thought I was going to die, it changes you.
Yeah.
You realize the only thing that matters is life. And that as long as there's life, there's hope.
I feel you 100, because, it's like I went from 189 pounds down to 98 pounds in 2.5 weeks. And, it was like, what the hell? it was like, okay, I'm not going to be here much longer. And then
right.
I had to have a feeding tube put in, but I was like, they gave me 3 weeks to live, and they called all my family, and I'm in the hospital, and all my family shows up, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? And, my family goes, the doctors called us, we're here. And I said, hey, if I thought the time was now, I would have called you. I said, man, they ain't no different than a car mechanic. They only know what they think. I said, but you know what? I said, I'm a fighter, and I'm not going anytime soon. And it was crazy, because after that moment, I took a year and a half off from the sport. And there was a young fighter by the name of Zach Cummings that I'd known,
yes,
God, since he was a kid. And he asked me to shoot his fight. And I took the fight, not knowing that 2 days later I would go in and have to have my appendix, my part of my spleen, my 10 feet of my intestine.
Man, you've been through the ringer.
Oh, man, it was a crazy surgery. You know, like I said, my gallbladder, my appendix, 10 feet of my intestine, all because of a damn feeding tube had blown up.
Oh.
And nobody got it, and it got lodged in my colon. And so, make a long story short, the day after the surgery, I tell the surgeon, he comes in to see me, I tell him, either unhook me now or I'm going to unhook myself, but either way, I'm leaving the hospital today. Because I had weigh-ins on Friday.
Right.
And he goes, what are you talking about? You're going to be here for another 6 weeks, bro. I said, no, I'm not. I said, you either unhook me or I'm going to unhook myself. The choice is yours. He goes, I'll tell you what. You get me and two of my colleagues tickets to be right there where you're at. And now, mind you, I had 453 or 57 staples in my abdomen.
Oh.
And he says, you stay in the hospital one more night, and we'll release you tomorrow morning, but we're going to be at this fight. And I said, deal. And he let me. And, you know, Zach Cummings won that night against Lamont Stafford. And as a photographer, people think that we got the greatest seats in the house. They think that we got the best view. Well, we don't, because we're focused through a camera. And
yeah.
Zach's given the speech and talking about a tremendous warrior, and then I'm watching him walk closer to me, and he jumps over the top of the cage, and he hops down. I look to the left and the right of me, and there's his parents, and Zach came over and gave me a hug and dedicated his fight to me.
Oh, that's cool.
And it made me realize that, you know what, when it's my time to go, the Lord will decide. But on the same note, it made me realize that this sport appreciated what I'd done.
Oh, yeah. Listen, between you and I, the first time I went up to the Submission Underground, I blew my shoulder out, and I couldn't get it back in the socket. And Chow's interviewing me in the cage. He taps my shoulder and says, does that hurt? I look at him and go, yeah, like a motherfucker. Okay, he starts laughing. He calls me the toughest guy he's ever met. You know, stupid stuff like that. We're joking around. But then when I go to leave, now remember, I'm downstairs. I'm thinking, I may be done. My shoulder's shot. It took me an hour and a half to get out of the building because people wanted to take their picture with me. They wanted autographs. And it's amazing the profound effect you can have on other people just by not giving up.
Yeah. You know, my grandfather instilled it in me, and, you know, it's made me the man I am today. You know, I'm not the perfect example of health, but I tell you what, once that bell rings, I don't know. I'm a whole new person, man. It's like
it's a rush.
It's a divine intervention of some sort. You know, it's crazy because I look back over the years. It's nice to have somebody that's been around as long as me on my show, because you get it. You know, I look at the talks that I've had with Dan Severn from the No Holds Bars day to the UFC to, you know, my aspects in boxing. And I take away, like I told you earlier, each and every thought from every show. But life is a place that we can either choose to grow from, or we could be sheeple.
Yes.
What is it, would you say that is the true aspect, if you had to correlate it into a statement on a piece of paper, what would you say would be the true aspect that Phil Dunlap would orchestrate or convey about his life?
Basically that I always believed nothing was impossible. I was always that guy that, you know, you can't watch. Like, yeah, when I broke my neck, you'll never do anything physical again. A 15-year-old can't go over to Burma and fight professionally. You're going to be dead in 6 months. You need shoulder replacement. You're never going to compete again. You need knee reconstruction. You're never going to compete again. Okay? Never is a word I just won't listen to. Okay? So for me, like, you know, I would say my motto is watch me.
Yeah, That's
you know, it's, no matter how many times I go down, I'm getting up. And if I could teach anybody anything, it would be nothing in life is impossible. Okay, you might not be as successful as you wanted to be, but it's not impossible to be moderately successful at it.
That's so true. You know, you're set to, gosh, I don't know how you keep up the schedule. Back-to-back super fights, and then I guess it's the following, what is it, the following month, yeah.
Three weeks later, I'm doing another one, but I got stupid and I registered because I'm going to be in San Diego the last weekend of February. So I'm doing two tournaments the last weekend of February too.
Oh, geez, you're making me feel old, bro.
Dude, I gotta be honest with you. You know, it's kind of like I'm a realist too. You know, remember, I'm 57. Okay, eventually the wheels are going to go. And then maybe I'm just a gym rat. Or maybe I just start doing the IBJJF and the NABJJF age bracket divisions. Because I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of good older grapplers out there, but there's a big difference between rolling with another 50-year-old and rolling with a 26-year-old black belt.
Yeah, I'm going to just kind of agree and disagree with you there because, you know, we talk about old man jits, okay, and I know the artistry has evolved and they do these super flying arm bars and all crazy stuff, but I'm the type of person that I believe that you could come at me with a tornado, you can come at me with a snowstorm, hail, but it's the platform. It's the foundation that you can't tear down. That's what I feel about jiu-jitsu.
Where it gets a little bit weird, and I always say this, is, okay, if I implement my game, okay, which is generally if I find myself on my back, control the guy, get a sweep, get on top, slow and steady, keep a slow, steady rhythm, a lot of pressure, I can do well against the kids. But if I get caught up in playing a loose game and going for things, that's when as older jiu-jitsu players we start to struggle. And every once in a while, I'll be honest with you, no matter how good you are, you know, you do suddenly see something and I'll go for that. So like I noticed to myself that I'm much better when I stick to my game plan, slow and steady, hit my spots, control, control, control. Don't let him use his flexibility, his athleticism. And I'll be honest with you, like everybody always tells me, I'm the living embodiment of old man strength. You know, it's kind of like I walk off the mat with guys 70 pounds heavier than me that say you're the strongest guy I ever rolled with. And I used to take that as a backhanded compliment. You know, because everybody always says in jiu-jitsu you shouldn't use strength. But I always tell people, I ain't apologizing because my daddy was bigger than your daddy. You know, it's that idea. It took me a lot of moving heavy iron to get this big and strong. Okay? I'm not going to hesitate to use a little bit of it if I have to. Nobody ever tells the flexible guy not to use his flexibility. Nobody ever tells the quick guy not to use his quickness. So, you know, if I can hit that spot and just crush the life out of you, I'm going to.
I feel you. God, I love your analogies. It's you were a kid when you said, I'm going to speak freely today.
Oh, listen, between you and I, it's why I don't teach kids. The stuff that comes out my mouth, I swear to God, half my students come in, if they're not feeling well, they come in to hear what crazy shit's going to come out my mouth next.
Oh, but then I think that's what defines you and makes you, and I think that's what people love about you. You know,
it's supposed to be fun. Like, you know, take a look at something. Like, you come from a boxing background. Most guys, they get good at boxing. They love the gym. They love to box. They love to train. Okay, same thing with jiu-jitsu. If you make it fun for people, they'll get good. it's kind of like I have such a low-key atmosphere when I teach. I don't like all the martial trappings. And maybe because I just train adults, it makes it easier because I don't have to, like, instill discipline in kids. But it's kind of like that idea is, to me, if you're not having fun, you're not going to stick with something. I stuck with this for 50 years because I'm having fun.
That's dope. You know, I like that. You know, Professor, we know you've got so many fights between now and the 7th of next month, and that's to be commended. You know, it truly is. You're a character that why haven't you been on my show before? Because we've been friends for quite some time.
Yeah, because basically, normally I hide from publicity.
Yeah. Well, I know
I'm very, I'm very weird with that. But the reason I wanted to come on was to help raise money for the show in March for DJ, because it's kind of that idea that, like, you know, for me, I'd rather just blend in the background. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm that guy that shows up in an open mat, and, you know, I just roll with people. I don't spend a lot of time, like, you know, like everybody tends to, like, you know, give you their resume. I'm kind of like, oh, let's just roll. We'll figure it out on the fly. Either you suck or I suck. It's kind of like, you know, I'm not this person that feels the need. Like, you know, I've always bought in, like, back east. I don't know if you know who Vlad Kulikov is, but he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he's a master of sport in sambo, and he's one of my best friends, and he's an absolute beast. But when I was looking for to bring in another grappling instructor too, you know, he was a no-brainer because he's one of the best all-around grapplers I've ever met. And the funny thing is, people ask me, you know, you're bringing in another really good guy. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
You know, well, I cross-train out here with a lot of really good guys, and I'm a big one on the idea that, like, you know, I don't need to be the man. Like, I joke around, I'm just the old man, but, you know, I don't have that need to be the man. Like, I see all these schools that don't allow cross-training. And it's because the teacher feels this need to be the guru, the only answer. Okay, where if you can let go of that crap, and you can surround yourself with a lot of really good guys, your game starts to evolve. You know, I always thought and it's one of the things I'm finding fascinating about grappling into my 50s, is, okay, my shoulder goes. Now my game has to adapt. When I was younger, I was a speed merchant. Now I'm big, strong, and slow. Okay, so I have to adjust my game. And that's what I'm finding fascinating, is having to adjust my own game to the maturation process of my body. Because it's almost like I'm always going back to school again.
Yeah, it truly is, you know, and this sport that we're in, you know, it's crazy because, you know, I you remind me so much in the way you speak and thought, but not truly in voice, but in thought of Kung Lee. You know, the first time I ever got to interview the man, you know, I asked him about recognition in life and all the attributes that he had gained. And he said, I don't want to talk about that. And he said, if you always look back over your shoulder, you can never proceed forward in life. If you look at things that you're going through as a hindrance, there will never be a tomorrow. You will never reach your goals. Do you feel that statement sits well with Professor Phil Dunlap?
Actually, I do. Honestly, I believe that, you know, one of the reasons we get adversity is to make us stronger. In other words, look at all you've been through. Okay, did it make you a stronger person? Did it give you a better appreciation for life? Okay, not that I'm going to say that you're going to sit there and say, oh, I'm really glad. Like, you know, you're never going to hear me say, I'm really glad I went through chemo. I'm really glad my hair fell out in clumps. Okay, but you will hear me say, I grew a lot because of it. that in the long run, I'm a better person because of it. Okay, so if you look back on, you know, we've all seen it, the guy who played football in high school, and that was a high point of his life. Okay, if you're always looking back at your past accolades, you won't grow in the future. And if you look at obstacles as insurmountable, I took years ago, I used to run the government contracting division for AmeriGas. They're a big propane company, in fact, the biggest one in the country. And, you know, a lot of these big companies bring in these sales courses. And one of the things I got out of one of the sales courses we took was that idea that don't look at obstacles as obstacles. There's opportunities. Because there's two types of people in the world. Actually, there's three types of people in the world. Okay, one sees an obstacle and surrenders. The other sees an obstacle and starts banging into it. The third sees an obstacle, figures out a way to fix the obstacle, and makes money off it.
I like that.
So, yeah, I'm a big one on anything that gets in your way. Analyze, adapt, and fix. Who knows? You might make money off it.
Well, most definitely. You know, I've had to do that my whole career. I really
listen,
have, you know.
In the MMA business, come on, remember the early days? Okay, in other words, the tap-out guys selling from the trunk of their car and stuff? In other words, like, you know, it's a completely different game. And anybody like you that's been in it forever, you've had to adapt so many times, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, that's funny you bring that up because I'm going to cut it the show up here in a minute. But it reminds me of the, you know, me and Dan Mergliotta, because we're homies in life, and I had him on the show. And he goes,
actually, Dan's a good guy, and he's actually a really good grappler.
Yeah, he really is. And I love that a lot of people don't realize that he has his own place. He trains. He does all of this because this is who he is. But
He ran the first fighting shows in New Jersey. They were called BAMA.
Yes, he did. Now,
so many guys got
BAMA's
their start in New Jersey at his shows.
Yeah. But, you know, he made a statement that was so true. He goes, Don, you and I, we take a job. We pay for our own airline ticket. We pay for our own hotel. Half the time we have to pay for a ticket to get into an event that we were hired to shoot or work, not knowing if we were even going to get paid. And, you know, we did it because we loved it. And, I mean, that's a sport, man. You're not going to get rich in it, but you will get rich in a brotherhood, a friendship.
You'll get more memories and more friends in this sport. You know, it's crazy. You know, I have a lifetime of great memories, and I have so many great friends, okay, because I was involved in this sport.
Well, that's the greatest the greatest aspect of the sport is relationships. You know, time and time again, from the inception of the sport, that's what all these people remember the most. And even in boxing, you know, I asked them, you know, you've won 5 world titles in 3 different weight classes. What means more to you? And every one of them will say the Golden Gloves. You know, you know, and that's what's so true about the sport. And I want the purity to come back. But Professor, we got to kind of wrap things up here.
Okay.
You know, I want to ask you a couple more questions, and then, you know, I did leave the link. If you want to donate to the people on iHeart, Univision, CastBox, and the 26 other platforms that I'm on, there's a link on the header to donate money. It's the Eventbrite link. Go ahead and hit that. And I generally don't leave links, Professor, but I respect you, so I left the link on there because
I really appreciate that.
Well, it's for a tremendous cause, brother. But, you know, I want to finish this out in kind of a weird way, I guess you could say.
Fire,
you know,
away. Like I said, I'm a nut job with no filter, so don't worry about it.
No, you're good because, you know, I just really want to give, I like to give the fighters and practitioners and people of all walk from the genre of the sport we love an aspect to be able to give a moment to those who stood by you, those who whispered words of intent, those who pushed you when you needed it in life, an opportunity to thank those people. So now is your time, Professor. If you had a way to give thanks or just a statement to those people that truly pushed you in life and helped define who you are, what would that statement be?
I would actually want to thank everybody that shared my journey from my grandfather who started it to my students who, you know, without them, I wouldn't be who I was, to my opponents who always brought the best out in me, to my wife now who supports a 57-year-old running around the country acting like a 12-year-old, my kids, okay, for inspiring me to show them that nothing's impossible. You know, I just want to thank everybody who shared the journey with me, okay? In other words, like, you know, there were times I stumbled, you helped me up. There were times that you doubted me. There were times that I doubted myself, okay? But we all got through it together. Without everybody that shared that journey, I wouldn't be who I am now.
Amen. You know, this sport creates some tremendous individuals. It brings aspects of life together that form a unity and a bond, as we talked about earlier, through relationships. Coach, Professor, when it's all said and done, how would you like to most be remembered?
Yeah, honestly, I was saying that to somebody the other night. Like, you know, people all the time, you know, they see you in a gym or they see you compete, and it's kind of like, oh, man, I wish I was a badass like you. I mean, come on, beating people up? I really don't want to be remembered for that. I want to be thought of as a giving, caring human being, a good husband, you know, a good father. You know, the important things in life, in other words, that I helped, you know, change a kid's life. I'll be honest with you, it's one of the things I love so much about teaching. You get some kid that came up hard who maybe didn't have a father, and for the first time, he has a man telling him, I believe in you. You can do this. And not only do you see him get in the cage, but he changes his life. He gets a good job. He gets married. He has kids. Like, you know, one of my best fighters ever, okay, was he also was smart. And I've always been one. I always tell these kids to come up with a backup plan. Well, the backup plan took over. Married, kids, job, blah, 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 blah. Okay, people always ask me, was I disappointed? I said, no, he's got a great life. So, in other words, I would much more want to be remembered as a caring, good person. You know, come on. You know, if I was president, the president I'd want to be remembered as would be a George Washington or a Lincoln. You're somebody who had a tremendous effect on the lives of others. I've always admired people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King, who believed violence might not be the best answer.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah, that's dope. You know, I'm so honored that you came on the show today. You truly opened my eyes to a different layer in humanity, bro.
Dude, I'm really thankful you had me on. I really appreciate it. Number one, you know, it's kind of like, you know, of course I wanted to raise some money for my opponent's son, DJ. But I also like to have, like, real discussions. And, you know, a lot of times people just want to focus on, okay, what was your biggest memory of? And, you know, I'm sitting there saying, yeah, I had a tooth in my hand, blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, you know, a lot of times it degenerates into almost they want to talk about specific fights. I really enjoyed this because this was more a discussion on life, you know, and how the martial arts or combat sports in particular can make your life better. That, you know, in other words, I've really enjoyed this conversation because I feel like I got a chance to present. The true me is not the guy who, oh, I knocked his teeth out, I knocked him out with a headbutt, you know, blah, 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 blah. The true me is the guy that was on today, and I got to share that. So I'm extremely appreciative.
It's mutual, sir. It truly is. You know, not often in life. You know, that's what I try to tell people, and I think that's why so many cling to the show and the sport aspect is because there's 100,000 shows out there. Why should I be like everybody else? You know, I can't even speak. 99.9% of the time, I know my guests coming on because they've shot their career, you know, or I've met them in an aspect and we've created a bond or a friendship. So truly it's like we're having a phone call and 300,000 plus people are listening, but people love the real aspect of it. You know, I wanted to create a show.
That's the cool part.
Well, the thing is, I wanted to create a show that allowed you to speak, to give the fighter a voice. You know, not necessarily what's on Wikipedia or Tapology or what you see on social media or television, but straight from the horse's mouth.
You know how the typical show is? Somebody would have pulled me on, and let's face it, Shannon's a big name. Okay, he's got like 200 and some fights. They would have tried to fish for me to, you know, talk smack. Oh, I'll rip his arms off. I'm going to do this. That's not me. I don't do that. I'm horrible at that. Okay, the closest I come to talking smack is I really respect him, but I think I'm going to win. Yeah, I'm not a good smack talker. It's just not my game.
See, but that's what I love about this sport. And, you know, for a while there, you know, because me and Jacob Stitch Duran are good buddies in life. And
yes.
For a while there, you know, go back to UFC 194, the insurgence of Conor McGregor. You know, he came on my page and called me a bitch, and that's cool. You know, I could live with that.
It's
but you know, I talked to Stitch. But I talked to Stitch about it, and he goes, "Bro, we're from the trenches. The sport is changing. We either evolve with it because we love it, or we step the fuck out." And he goes, "I know you love it too much, so continue to do what you do." He said, "I'm going to back your show, and I want you to let your dick swing." And he goes, "I want you to show the world what the sport is truly about."
Right.
And
but I also look at it, the idea is we need people like that, too. It attracts, it expands the fan base. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to galvanize a whole new crew of fans to come to the sport by talking respectfully. Okay, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, our society now wants hype. Okay, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I always tell my guys, like, you know, you see it on the internet. Okay, like, you know, I have some people that compare me to Mother Teresa. You know, I teach for free. I do this. I do that. I do the other thing. But I also have haters, too. And it's kind of like I always say, if I have haters, imagine how many haters people that talk trash have. So, like, I always try to tell people, you know, look at it this way. Your fans are going to buy a ticket. Your haters are going to buy three because they're going to be – they're going to bring two friends to watch you get your ass kicked. Okay, so at least you sold tickets. Embrace the haters, too.
Yeah, I've tried, you know. And a lot of people always tell me to embrace the hate. But after 24 years, it's not that I don't embrace the hate. It just gets a little fucking old.
Yeah, but I look at it this way. Okay, now after this conversation, if I went on the internet and I said something negative about you, you'd probably be a little hurt. You know, if we were being completely honest, okay, or if you said something bad about me, I'd be a little hurt because I respect you. Okay. Right. But what I'm saying is most of these people that hate you, you have no respect for anyway, so why let it bother you? For it to bother me, I have to respect the guy. Like, if a guy that I respect says I'm a piece of shit, I'm like, why'd he say that? I like him, okay? But if it's some guy that's talking shit about everybody on the internet, who cares what Conor McGregor says? He says negative shit about everybody.
Yeah. I loved it, though, because I was one of the first that he called a bitch because I said he was the most disrespectful fighter ever brought into the sport of MMA. But, you know, I had to eat my words. You know, I'm a man of transparency. Before we wrap things up, you know, I had interviewed Colby Covington from the early days.
Right.
And I had shot Colby from the early days. And it was like you know, clockwork. Every fight he had, he was superstitious. He didn't like to do an interview before the fight, but he would always come on the following Tuesday. And he went down to Brazil. He fought Damian Maia, and he ridiculed the whole country of Brazil. Well, he had hit me and he said, "We good for Tuesday?" And I said, "No, bro." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Man, you disrespected a whole country and you disrespected a lot of people. I don't play that on my show." "Yeah, but I've been..." I said, "Go ahead."
He was training with American Top Team at the time.
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is, make a long story short, he got a little teed off with me, and then I got an inbox from his mother. And, you know, I'm transparent, you know, because I still have the screenshot, you know. It's like, she said, "Well, will you at least let him come on and talk about the Fabrizio Verdum incident?" And I was like, "You know, Noel," I said, "all right, I'll let him come on." Well, Colby had knew what time the show was. My show is on Tuesday at 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Pacific. And he starts hitting me about 12 o'clock in the afternoon and tells me, "If you don't do a show with me now, you're not going to get me. You should be grateful to get 15 minutes of Colby Covington's time." So I was like, "Bro, you know what? You've always been a man of your word. If you don't show up at 9, then I'll just bring somebody else on." And for like 3 hours straight, he inundated me with texts. "You better do it now. You better do it now." I said, "You know what, bro? Stop this crap. You be a man of your word. Show up. We'll do the show." So I hit a fellow UFC fighter and asked him, will he fill, you know, told him the situation, asked him, will he fill the slot? He said, "Yeah, but bro, Colby's going to show up." And I said, "I'm not so sure." He goes, "No, trust me, he'll show up." About a minute and a half before showtime, Colby calls. And, you know, the other fighter said his ego was too big not to let him be on the show. So, now, remember, he's told me that I should be grateful for 15 minutes of his time. So I'm watching the clock, you know, because our studio has a counter. You know, I'm watching the clock, and about 14 minutes and 50 seconds in, he's just rip-roaring in this conversation. And at 15 minutes, I said, "You know, Colby, you told me I should be lucky to have 15 minutes of your time. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. You have a good night,
oh.
And you got... God bless." And I hung up on him right in the middle of a conversation. And I tell people this because I want people to realize, I don't care if you're a world champion. I don't care if you're a legend in the sport. You're not going to disrespect a fan. You're not going to disrespect me. And you're not going to disrespect my listeners. And I look at everybody in the sport as being equal. You give
people
me respect.
People lose track of the fact that these are symbiotic relationships, okay? In other words, you know, coming on your show, you know, if you have intriguing personalities, it helps with the viewership or the listeners, okay? But it helps him promote his career. So it's a one hand washes the other. I don't understand why athletes don't understand this. It's like sponsors. You know, athletes think sponsors are supposed to give them things. No, it's about how you help them sell products. It's a symbiotic relationship. You know, it drives some athletes and how self-centered they become drives me crazy.
Yeah, it truly does. But you know, there's a new line of humble fighters coming up, so there's a breath of fresh air coming up in the sport, and I truly love it. You know, Professor, today's interview was tremendous. I loved your candid, you know, comments and remarks. You truly do exemplify what I love to have on my show. I'm going to pass the mic to you, Professor. If there's any friends or family, any social media sites, or just anything that you would like to add to the program before we get off the air, the floor is yours,
well,
sir.
First of all, I'd just like to thank, you know, everybody who's supported me in this journey, and everybody I train with, from all my guys back east to all the guys out here, including Gokur and Steve at Hayestan Freestyle Mixed Martial Arts and Odin's Hall BJJ. And I want to thank the guys at Silver Wolf for allowing me to start the school up again in their location. And I want to thank the guys at Old Man Strength for always having my back and giving me sweet gear and helping me compete. Because if there's one thing I actually do have, it's a little bit of old man strength. And I also really want to thank you, Don, for having me on and helping me raise awareness for DJ, who has a congenital spinal disease and is in for a long haul. Because people like DJ and Dutch, his dad and his wife, they're the real warriors. They're in for a battle, and I know they're up to it, and I just want to do my small part, and I'm hoping other people will get on the bandwagon and help me show them that as a community, we care for each other and we have each other's back. And thanks again. I really appreciate it.
Oh, the honor was all mine, brother. It truly was. I can't wait to have you on again. You know, much luck and all these super fights you got going on. You're a tremendous man in your walk, and like I said, I don't know why you haven't been on my show yet, but I can't wait until the next time. You know,
now
next
that,
time
I,
we'll
now that I've been on it and
special.
I enjoyed it, you'll get me out of my hermit hole.
Well, Professor, thank you so much. You have a good day. And thank you.
You too. Have a great day, and thanks again. And thanks to all your listeners for listening.
All right. God bless you, brother. You have a good
day. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, I love him, man. You know, we've been friends for a long time, but I've never had him on the show. But I got to tell you, tremendous, tremendous, tremendous professor. With that being said, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Sisteran and Juan Ramirez. The 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddy, and Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. Today's show just kind of amazed me. I had a lot of fun. With that being said, you have a good day. God bless. I'm going to take us out with Soul Rebel Project.
Looking for, girl, it's your love. That's what I need.